We already did half of that. You can have a seat, I'll give you the book. You don't need to sing, we already did that. You can just start.
Can you pull this out? Because I'm not going to sit.
Gopal is Guru Krishna.
51 and 52. If I can read this, 51 and 52 and 52. 51,
52, 53.
Can I take my mask off when I get class?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Okay, we're reading from Canto 1. Chapter 13, Dhritarashtra quits home, text 51 and 52.
And
53 also, okay.
Dhritarashtra Sahasrara.
I can't read the Sanskrit very good without glasses. These aren't my glasses. Somebody else leads Sanskrit. Can you lead the Sanskrit?
Dhritarashtra Sahabratra.
Translation. O King, your uncle Dhritarashtra, his brother Vidura, and his wife Gandhari have gone to the southern side of the Himalaya Mountains, where there are shelters of the great sages. Please repeat. O King, your uncle Dhritarashtra, his brother Vidura, and his wife Gandhari have gone to the southern side of the Himalaya Mountains, where there are shelters of the great sages. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. To pacify the mourning Maharaj Yudhishthir, Narad first of all spoke from the philosophical point of view. Then he began to describe the future movements of his uncle, which he could see by his foreseeing powers, and thus began to describe as follows. Translation. The place is called Saptarota, divided by seven, because there the waters of the sacred Ganges were divided into seven branches. This was done for the satisfaction of the seven great rishis. Please repeat. The place is called Saptarota, divided by seven, because there the waters of the sacred Ganges were divided into seven branches. This was done for the satisfaction of the seven great rishis. On the banks of the Saptarota, Dhritarashtra is now engaged in beginning Ashtanga Yoga by bathing three times daily, in the morning, noon, and evening, by performing the Agnihotra sacrifice with fire and by drinking only water. This helps one control the mind and the senses and frees one completely from thoughts of familial affection. Please repeat. On the banks of the Saptarota, Dhritarashtra is now engaged in beginning Ashtanga Yoga by bathing three times daily in the morning, noon, and evening, by performing the Agnihotra sacrifice with fire and by drinking only water. This helps one control the mind and the senses and frees one completely from thoughts of familial affection. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The yoga system is a mechanical way to control the senses and the mind and divert them from matter to spirit. The preliminary processes are the sitting posture, meditation, spiritual thoughts, manipulation of air passing within the body, and gradual situation in trance, facing the absolute person, Paramatma. Such mechanical ways of rising to the spiritual platform prescribe some regulative principles of taking bath daily 3 times, fasting as far as possible, sitting and concentrating the mind on spiritual matters, and thus gradually becoming free from vishaya, or material objectives. Material existence means to be absorbed in the material objective, which is simply illusory. House, country, family, society, children, property, and business are some of the material coverings of the spirit, Atma. And the yoga system helps one to become free from all these illusory thoughts and gradually turn towards the absolute person, Paramatma. By material association and education, we learn simply to concentrate on flimsy things. But yoga is the process of forgetting them altogether. I'm going to stop for a second. So, Prabhupada's making some very profound and even astounding statements here. I'm afraid. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Kinagana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama. So, so Srila Prabhupada is mentioning the ways of the mechanical ways, the yoga method of rising to the spiritual platform, which involves bathing 3 times daily, fasting as far as possible, sitting and concentrating the mind on spiritual matters, and thus gradually becoming free from vishaya, or material objectives. And then Prabhupada says this, material existence means to be absorbed in the material objective, which is simply illusory. And that sentence just completely smashes the illusion of the material world. We're all, every living entity everywhere is in some kind of maya. Of course, there's maha maya and there's yoga maya. There's the inferior energy of the Lord, but there's also the parashakti, his superior energy. So that's the maya that we want to become absorbed in. I'm reading Giriraj Maharaj's book on Juhu, and he was talking to Prabhupada and he said, "Wow, Prabhupada, you know, I'm doing my best here, but, you know, sometimes I seem to fall into Maya. And Srila Prabhupada looked at him and said, "You are always in Maya. Sometimes you fall into Krishna." You know? Yes. So, here we are in the material world, struggling to get out of it. And what is the great boat of deliverance? Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavat Purana, the spotless Purana, so helpful to help us become absorbed in that bhakti shakti, that internal potency of the Lord. And this is why daily we become absorbed in the Bhagavat. And then Prabhupada continues, by material association and education, material is the key word there, we learn simply to concentrate on flimsy things. So everything is flimsy, according to Prabhupada, in the material world. Everything that doesn't help us directly become absorbed in the internal potency is flimsy. Business, home, family, business, everything that we have to deal with on a daily basis. But we know that nirbandha krishna sambandhe yukta vairagyam uchate, that if we can dovetail whatever we're doing in Krishna's service, it actually turns it around and it becomes spiritual. So that's what we're trying to do in this process of Krishna consciousness. Okay, I'm going to continue in the purport where I left off. Modern so-called yogis and yoga systems manifest some magical feats, and ignorant persons are attracted by such false things, or they accept the yoga system as a cheap healing process for the diseases of the gross body. But factually, the yoga system is the process of learning to forget what we have acquired throughout the struggle for existence. So Prabhupada's saying the yoga process, the yoga system, is a process of learning to forget what we have acquired throughout the struggle for existence. And he's talking in this purport about coming into contact and with Lord Paramatma, the Lord of the heart. And we can see Lord Paramatma everywhere. He's in the heart of every living entity. Of course, not just human beings, but also all the species of life, insects, aquatics, all the mammals, the fish, the trees, the plants. Lord Paramatma is there. And the scientists, for example, they can understand that all the birds and animals have such a thing as instinct, but they don't know where this instinct comes from. You know, they see that, well, how does this bird know to fly 1,000 miles every year from this place to that place where his ancestors always fly and how does this happen? But Prabhupada said that instinct is because Lord Paramatma is in the heart of the living entity, and he is directing or giving instruction. Same thing, Lord Paramatma is in our heart, and sometimes we listen, and sometimes we follow the instruction. Sometimes we hear it, and we may ignore it. Sometimes we don't want to listen, so we don't even hear it because we don't want to. But Lord Paramatma is there trying to guide the living entities, because the perfection of life is to surrender unto the spiritual master and unto the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Krishna and take shelter of them. And if we can do that, then we will be happy and peaceful and Krishna conscious. And this is, for us, the perfection of our life. Okay, continuing in the purport. Dhritarashtra was all along engaged in improving family affairs by raising the standard of living of his sons, or by usurping the property of the Pandavas for the sake of his own sons. These are common affairs for a man grossly materialistic and without knowledge of the spiritual forces. He does not see how this can drag one from heaven to hell. By the grace of his younger brother Vidura, Dhritarashtra was enlightened and could see his grossly illusory engagements. And by such enlightenment, he was able to leave home for spiritual realization. Sri Narada Dev was just foretelling the way of his spiritual progress in a place which was sanctified by the flow of the celestial Ganges. Drinking water only, without solid food, is also considered fasting. This is necessary for advancement of spiritual knowledge. Okay, I'm going to stop here for a second. So, this chapter is all about Dhritarashtra quitting home. And we know that there were the three brothers, Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura. And they had a very spiritual father. Does anybody know who their biological father was? Srila Vyasdev, Srila Dvaipayana Vyas. I mean, what a father, my goodness. So, but Dhritarashtra was born blind, and as the Bhagavat says, he was not only blind by his sight, but he was also blind in his heart. So he was blind, and for that reason, although he was the eldest born, according to scripture, he was not allowed to take the throne because scripture demands that a king be a very fit person and not have certain defects. So blindness ruled out the possibility of him becoming the king. So that's why we had the whole situation coming up of the fratricidal war between the Kurus and the Pandavas. And that's why, of course, Dhritarashtra's son, Duryodhan, was so felt that it was unfair and felt that he should be the king. So he absolutely felt he had the right. You know, so this is why the whole situation came up of the Bhagavad Gita. But now Dhritarashtra is quitting home. He's saying, I've had enough. You know, it's time for me to go to the Himalayas. My faithful wife, Gandhari, will come with me. We're going to live among the sages, live an austere life, giving up the comforts of home, castle, all the nice servants. We're giving up these comforts, and hopefully I will become enlightened. Why? Because he's taking some advice from his saintly brother. They had one very saintly brother, Vidura, who throughout the course of his life had gone through definite humiliation and unpleasant situations with his with the family, with his elder brother and his brother's son in particular, insulting him on many occasions. But finally, he persisted. Vidura persisted in attempting to educate his elder brother, his eldest brother, and finally got through to him and is encouraging him at the very fag end of his life to quit home, try for enlightenment with the great sages, perform a little austerity, purify your existence, come into contact, more close contact with Lord Paramatma. And this is what they're doing here. They're in the process of quitting home. Okay. A foolish man wants to be a cheap yogi without observing the regulative principles. A man who has no control over the tongue at first can hardly become a yogi. Yogi and bogi are two opposite terms. The bogi, or the merry man, merry, M-E-R-R-Y, like as in Merry Christmas. The merry man who eats and drinks cannot be a yogi, for a yogi is never allowed to eat and drink unrestrictedly. We may note with profit how Dhritarashtra began his yoga system by drinking water only and sitting calmly in a place with a spiritual atmosphere, deeply absorbed in the thoughts of Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead. This is actually a wonderful purport by Prabhupada, as usual, a real gem. So they're going to, he's quitting home, and they know that they're facing certain austerities, even dangers. Who knows what one can encounter in the Himalayas, right? There could be tigers. They could be in a place where they couldn't find food. There could be so many certain dangers. But he's bound and determined now that this is the path that he must take to purify himself and to come closer to God. This is what he wants to do. He said, I come to the stage of realization. I've had enough dealing with my family, friends, and all these material situations. Now I'm going to try for the spiritual life and become absorbed in that. And there's always certain dangers in life. Param param yadviparam natesham. You know, there's danger at every step, Srila Prabhupada taught us. And even Srila Prabhupada faced so many dangers. If you look at the fight that Prabhupada put up to get the Juhu temple, he really wanted this temple. He had promised it to Radha Rasa Bihari. And certain demons were there trying to cause problems. At the beginning, they had like a small structure was made. It was made out of steel and cloth and bamboo and everything like that. It was sturdy but simple and not a permanent structure for the deities, because they didn't even have the deed to the property yet. So they kept, they did the artiks all day long, and they had one brahmachari sleeping kind of in front of the altar at night. And one night, some thieves came, and the devotee was sleeping, so they were able to just go right in, and they stole the Lord's crowns and flute. They stole Krishna's crowns and flute. In those days, a lot of times for crowns they might have, sometimes they were solid silver, and then they would bathe them in gold, you know, so it would look like really super solid gold, it would look like, you know. But they stole that. And when Prabhupada heard that, he was so upset. They started having three brahmacharis sleeping there, you know. He was very upset. And just the difficulties that we have to go through. His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj, before he took sannyas, was a brahmachari there, and he was the temple president. And he had to deal with, just as Prabhupada, devotees coming from all walks of life and all different situations, so all different mentalities of devotees, and to try to engage everybody. That was the big secret Prabhupada taught him, to engage everybody. So there was one of our God brothers was there, an American devotee, and one Indian gentleman came. He was called, they called him the King of Roses, because he was cultivating roses in Mumbai, in Bombay, as it was called at that time. So he offered to donate 1,000 rose bushes, which is really fantastic, if you think of it. So they accepted, and Prabhupada put this devotee, our God brother from America, in charge of planting them. So he had, half a dozen workers from outside that they hired to help with they were putting cow dung, and they had the earth and everything to put there. And they did a very nice job planting and getting rid of all the weeds that were there and building certain fences and making the place look very beautiful. And Prabhupada was very pleased. Prabhupada said, I told Giriraj, the temple president, you should give him facility, give him what he needs to accomplish this garden. And so one day, this devotee came to Giriraj Maharaj and said, I need a certain amount of money for the project. And Giriraj explained, well, just today, unfortunately, I don't have any funds at all, but as soon as I get some, you know. And the devotee got very, you know, incensed, immediately got very angry, got livid, and he said, you're obstructing my service to Prabhupada. Prabhupada told you to give me all facility to help me, you know. And then the devotee leaned back and he spit in the face of Giriraj. And it was like, oh my gosh, this is what... And Giriraj, he's the type, if anybody knows him, he's the type of person that really likes to de-escalate situation, you know, violent situations. You know, really likes to calm everybody down and not cause a fight, etc., like that. So there was a devotee next to him who had just joined, and he came from a Vaishnava family. His name was Raghunath. He came from a Vaishnava family, and he was a very sensitive devotee. When he saw that devotee spit at Giriraj, he actually fainted. And they were reviving him, and so that kind of de-escalated the situation. That devotee that fainted later was initiated, and Lokanath, so Lokanath Swami, you know. But I mean, it just goes to show that. Giriraj said, he said, I wasn't angry with the devotee for doing that because I realized that he was really serving Prabhupada nicely, and Prabhupada appreciated the service that he was doing. So how could I be angry with him? That's humility. But it just goes to show, you know, what the process that we have to go through in life. There's problems always come up, and some type of suffering is going to come up. Some situation that we don't like is going to come up, but we have to deal with it. You know, we have to satata kirta yanto mam yatantas cha dridavrata. You know, we have to just chant Krishna's holy names, endeavor with great determination, bow down before him, and we will become peaceful and happy in Krishna consciousness. I think, did I finish this? I think so. Does anybody have any questions? Or comments? And it's our wonderful God sister, Guru Prasad Devi, big Sankirtan devotee for many years. All glories to your service, Mataji.
So you're one of the biggest. Thank you for giving that impromptu class. Very nice. You think if Dhritarashtra had seen Krishna, he dealt with him, and, you know, obviously he didn't have a change of heart then. So you think he had to be removed from that situation to make some advancement? Like, he was worried about the you know.
Yeah, imagine that he had dealt with Krishna personally, face to face. Imagine Krishna coming personally as the truce maker before the Battle of Kurukshetra, personally coming and offering them the peace, you know, formula, and them being very offensive to Lord Krishna and to throw him into prison. And so it was like, you know, absurd, you know. They didn't understand. And I mean, look, it's inconceivable because, look, Baladev, he loved Dhritarashtra's son. He loved Duryodhana. But he had taught him how to fight with a club and, you know, been friends with him. Baladev loved him. So, you know, when the war came up, Baladev said, I'm not going to pick a side. Can't do it. I'm out of here, you know, like that. So, I mean, it's inconceivable. It's the pastimes of the Lord, you know. These people were all chosen for the Lord's pastimes. They're not exactly ordinary people like we are, or some of us are. So, it's the Lord's pastimes. It's the Lord's lila. He wants certain situations to come up. And
one other observation is, he said Dhritarashtra was drinking only water, and Prabhupada made the point that it's good to reduce your eating, control the senses, use it to control the senses.
Oh, sorry.
But the other thing in the Bhagavatam, it says don't eat too much, don't eat too little. Don't sleep too much, don't sleep too little. But here it's recommended that fasting was good to control the mind.
Yeah.
So sometimes it seems like in different situations, different principles apply.
Well, he's doing the real strict, this is real strict vanaprastha renunciation. Real end of life, you know, going out to the Himalayas. That was like, everybody, even now in India, they know what that means, although I don't know if they do it so much, but back then, certainly, they know. Going out in the Himalayas, what that means, it means you're going to be totally austere, and it's going to be real difficult, but you're going to bite the bullet, and you're going to do it, because that's your yajna, that's your tapa, you know, tapasya. Yes, Mataji.
Says they went to Ganga Stotra, like that. So it seems like they went to the higher planetary system of Saptarshi, the Tapaloka, right?
So what about the higher planetary system?
You said going to the Himalayas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought we read in the purport they went to the Saptarshi planetary system. It says where the Ganges gets divided into.
Oh, it's I don't know about that, but Pran Govind Prabhu, can you answer that? Do they go to the higher planetary systems?
In Mayapur, if you go on a parikrama, there is a place called Trivini, where Saptarishi, the seven sages, meditated. First they did near the Himalayas and then they went there. And still today, that place is there. What she's talking probably, you're probably talking about the above the Dhruva planet, there's a Saptarishi Mandal. Yeah, that's different.
But it says the Ganges gets divided.
Yeah, this is also Ganges. In Mayapur, yes, in Mayapur, from Mayapur if you take, it's about few hours. There's a seven small place, Saptarishi, is there. There's a Ganges, Saraswati, and Jamuna, all three, Trivini, is also there. But they have a replica also in the Himalayas.
The tree Sangam, the rivers near there.
Yeah.
Huh? So,
I have a question.
Yes, Guru.
I'm just hearing. When you say, Prabhupada said to Giriraj Maharaj, well, you're always in Maya, but sometimes you fall in. What it literally means, how it's relevant to us, I want to understand. So I want to practice not to fall for that.
Yeah. I mean, the way I relate to it is, I mean, I've been chanting Hare Krishna now for, I mean, close to 50 years, maybe 47 years or a little more. And sometimes I just look and say, wow, how is it that I'm still totally in Maya, you know?
What does that mean when you say you are in Maya? What does that mean?
Well, obviously, because we're devotees, have a sadhana, you know, we chant the sacred mantras, we eat sanctified foodstuff, we take the darshan of the Lord, which means not that, doesn't mean we see the Lord, it means the Lord can see us and glance upon us and give us blessings. So it behooves us whenever we're in front of them to say prayers, you know, and perform seva, read the sacred scriptures. Devotees do so many things on a daily basis, so it helps us to stay absorbed in the parashakti, the internal potency. But still, you know, sometimes you feel, wow, I've got this problem maybe with my house or my body or my family member or like that. And so sometimes we may, you know, get pulled down from that, from a spiritual, seemingly spiritual platform. But if we always, if Krishna is in the center of everything that we do, then that's going to help us stay absorbed in the internal potency. I don't think I'm answering your question, though.
No, I'm trying to understand, like, when we say, the verse says, Rite artam jat pratyata na pratyata chatmani, tat vidyat atmana maya jata bhaso jatatama. So I was talking to Bir Krishna Maharaj yesterday. I said, what does that mean when you say everything is related with Krishna? Is that like awareness? I am aware, then I'm not in Maya? Or what is that? What is that conception we should practically... Because when you say consciousness is in America, we think it's like awareness.
Yeah.
But also consciousness in Vedic terminology, chetan, means you have a thinking power, you are aware, also you have feeling, all this combined together. It's not exactly the same as... Because we are a unit of consciousness. The soul, like the discussion started, like you say, 1/10,000th of hair. I say, how do you measure 1/10,000th of consciousness? If it is not a dead matter, we are not a matter. The soul is a spirit, means consciousness. It's a unit of consciousness. How do you measure a consciousness? If I am aware of unlimited, then how is this 1/10,000th of hair relevant? So it's a, for a particular purpose, the Veda gives this, that you are so insignificant, God is omnipotent, omnipresent. Okay, in comparison, this is okay. But if you, not if, since we believe we are unit of consciousness, consciousness cannot be measured. The awareness can go unlimitedly. Where this 1/10,000th of hair? So I was just trying to like, discuss with Maharaj. And then when we came to the point of the Maya, I said, what is literally means? The verse says, if everything is related with Krishna, when you don't see it, it is Maya. Okay, that means I should be aware that everything belongs to Krishna. Just like Prabhupada said, you cannot offer anything to Krishna which is not spiritual. Well, now everything is material. What does material mean? Material something to do with matter. When the word material, something to do with matter. So the matter, whether I have an attachment, or there's some attraction, or some controlling, otherwise what is that got to do with the matter? But if everything, since everything belongs to Krishna, then Prabhupada said, yes, if everything belongs to Krishna, you see it, then this is spiritual, you can offer it. Just like for an example, an apple. You take an apple or banana or anything, banana. If the banana, is some part of the banana is over-ripened, then it's tamogun. Presence of tamogun. If it is under-ripened, it's rajogun. If it's perfectly ripened, it's sattogun. Okay, the three modes actually made the banana. Now you offer it, then it's spiritualized. It's no more three modes. It's now spiritualized. Okay, so this awareness and action transform from material to spiritual.
So what I'm thinking, the only thing I can think of is that they would ask Prabhupada, his voice would ask Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you're seeing Krishna everywhere? And Prabhupada would say, yes, everywhere I see Krishna. So, am I on that platform? No, I'm not. So, therefore, I'm in Maya to some extent. But there's the whole range is there. There's a whole like range. You start out some living entity who doesn't know about spiritual life, never heard about Krishna, is totally controlled by the modes of material nature. And then gradually we become, starting to become devotees, chanting the holy names daily, doing sadhana, doing seva, becoming purified a little bit. And then the ultimate goal for us is what Srila Prabhupada would say, lying on the lap of Krishna. Why? Because Lord Govinda controls us instead of the modes controlling us. So that's like the whole range. So we're all somewhere on that range. You know? And Srila Prabhupada was always with Govinda, with Lord Krishna. You know, but we're somewhere, and he's teaching us if we stick with the process, then we'll become purified and we'll be able to.
Is Krishna conscious full time, all the time, that doesn't mean he's seeing blue boy everywhere, blue boy, you know. It's not like this, because he explained, Bhakti Narayan Swami, in Fisher Mansion, there was a big painting of a naked, you heard that story, no?
I don't, what story
in
is it?
Fisher Mansion in Detroit, there's a big painting with some naked woman and something.
No, I don't remember that story.
So when Srila Prabhupada came, said there were some sannyasis. Anyway, to make the story short, Srila Prabhupada was staring at the painting, and some sannyasis like, oh my God, how could you see? You know, like, they were on their own world. But after some time, Prabhupada said, Krishna is genius. How Krishna gave this intelligence to this painter to paint such a beautiful... He was not looking even at the naked. He was seeing Krishna. But not blue boy in the naked picture, is the Krishna as the intelligent. In Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter, Krishna says, balam balavatam, amongst the buddhi muddhimatam, the intelligent.
There's unlimited aspects to Krishna.
I'm the intelligent. Krishna says, among the intelligent, wise, I'm the intelligent. Yeah. So Prabhupada saw the Krishna's presence there in that relation, intelligent, of the artist, who painted a naked picture of a man and woman, but Prabhupada was seeing Krishna. So I was like very surprised that how Prabhupada finds. Means we have to be aware from Bhagavad Gita how it is related everything in this world to Krishna. Then, not like we'll be like a copy a blue boy, Shamsundar or black boy, and post him everywhere, or that's how I see Krishna. Not like that. It is relation. Everything in this world is related to Krishna with a particular quality, particular art Krishna gives. That's how I see with Prabhupada's conversation in difference, how he relates. He's not like trying to see the blue boy everywhere. Not like this.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna is everything. 10:41, Krishna says that, Jajjad Vihuti Matsattam. Wherever you see something astonishing, wonder, that's me. He didn't say, see me as a blue boy. He said, anywhere you see something attractive, something astonishing, wow, that is me, Krishna. So something like that.
Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice enlightening. Gruntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Dundakesha, I have your glasses.
Wait.
Oh, the water.
Nice glass without preparation. She's good.
Thank you, darling. I appreciate it. I could hardly still read the Sanskrit.